Come into this space and this time. Come into the living tradition of Unitarian Universalism. Come into this house of love and justice. You are welcome here. I'm the Reverend Bob LaValle, and I'm delighted to be joined by our music director, Susan Peck, and our worship leader, Judy Gehring. Reverend Angela is on study leave. Our DJ today is Dan Small, and our tech team is Chris Paul, Vance Bass, Raymond Wolfgang, and Bill Miller. And thank you all for co-creating our service today. I believe we have some announcements from Judy.
Good morning. We have two announcements today, and you'll find the link to both of those announcements in by your chat. First announcement today, there's only two more days to bid on the items for the social justice auction. You won't want to miss out on these fun and beautiful items. The link to learn more is in the chat, and you can bid until November 30th, which is tomorrow. Our second one, Susan Peck hosts First U's virtual open mic this afternoon at 4. Come join us for music, poetry, and pose presented by members and friends. Thank you.
Let's light our chalices. We light our chalices with the words of Albert Schweitzer. At times, our light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within. Come. Let us celebrate together.
Good morning. Good morning, and I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving in this year of strange Thanksgivings. There's still much to be grateful for. Will you join me in singing our opening hymn, We Gather Together? This is actually a humanist Thanksgiving hymn. It's an old familiar Protestant melody with new Unitarian Universalist lyrics.
Hi, I'm Rowan, and this is my dog, Lorelai. And could you please join me in the children's affirmation? We are Unitarians, Universalists, people of faith, with open minds, loving hearts, and helping hands.
I'm back. And this is a story for everybody, children of all ages, adults, and everything in between. Our worship theme this month has been healing. And one of the ways we heal one another is through forgiveness. And before forgiveness, it can be necessary for an apology, for someone to say, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? I'd like to tell you a true story, a vivid childhood memory of mine. I was hanging out in my backyard with all the neighborhood kids. We were trying to decide what game to play with a ball. If I remember correctly, I said, I should get to decide because it was my ball. So I get to decide what game we play. I was being really snotty and really selfish about the whole thing. So one of the other kids threw the ball at me hard, and they all ran off laughing at me to go play without me in the football field across the street. All afternoon, I wandered outside that fence around the field where they were playing, sobbing and crying my eyes out. I was a real crybaby, feeling very sorry for myself. But I didn't say I'm sorry to them. I honestly don't remember what happened at the end of that long, sad afternoon. I'm sure we all let it go the next day, but I've remembered how sad I felt for years and how I chose self-pity instead of apologizing, asking for forgiveness. As an adult, I've imagined going back in time to comfort that crying girl, wandering around outside the fence, and to give her some advice. And I wrote a song about it. The song is called Cry Baby. So I'd like to share that song with you right now. And I just have to fix my piano real quick. Here we go. This is Cry Baby. Hey, little girl, been crying all day, watching all the other kids play. What's the matter, baby? Why you crying, baby? Silly little girl hanging on the fence, hasn't got the sense to say, I'm sorry, so you're gonna cry, baby. So you lost your ball and you lost your friends, you think you lost it all, that it never ends. So you lost your friends and you lost your ball, you think you lost it all, and it never ends. Cry, baby. Can't you come out to play now? Can't you come out to play? Funny little girl, feeling lonely and lost, cause the wires got crossed and you sputtered and sparked into this lonely dark. Cry, baby. Silly little girl hanging on the fence, hasn't got the sense to say, I'm sorry, so you're gonna cry, baby. So you lost your friends and you lost your ball, you think you lost it all, that it never ends. Cry, baby. So you lost your friends and you lost your ball, you think you lost it all, that it never ends. Cry, baby. Can't you come out to play now? Can't you come out? Still shining, things can be just fine, and you can say, oh, sorry, maybe they're sorry too, and they just want to play with you. Pretty little girl, see the sun still shining, things can be just fine, and you can say, oh, sorry, I bet they're sorry too, and they just want to play with you. Do you want to play today? Just say. Just say, I'm sorry, can I come out to play today?
What a gift. What a gift. Well, let's pause the chat for a few moments during our meditation and the prayer. And we'll have an opportunity. We'll open, of course, the chat during the joys and concerns. And this is an opportunity to bring our hearts together, perhaps on a deeper level. So find a comfortable position for your body right now. Let's take three big deep breaths together. So inhaling up, exhale, softening down. Inhaling in peace, exhaling out what we're holding. Inhaling one last time, exhale. Get comfortable. Begin to turn your attention to your breath. Feel how your breath moves your body. Where do you feel your breath? In your throat, in your nose, in your chest? And while we're focused on our breath, I'm going to talk a little bit about this meditation and a church tradition. Each year, we have a tradition of creating peace doves that we hang on the holiday tree in our sanctuary. And we're not having a tree in the sanctuary this year, but we're still making doves. So as we move into 2 minutes of silent meditation, I want to invite you to choose a word, one word, a single word that you would like to appear on our virtual doves. One word. And Chris Paul will use those words to create dove-shaped word clouds that we'll share next week. So don't put the word in the chat yet. Sit with your word for 2 silent minutes. And when I sound the chime, the chat will be reopened and we'll take a minute or two for folks to share their words. We'll wait on the transition so folks can put their words into their single word into the chat bar. So let's sit in silence together for 2 minutes and think of a word. let's open the chat and folks can share their one word. Such lovely words.
Our church is a welcoming community where we find connection, a spiritual community where we find meaning. Our church is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. Please type in the chat box first your joys and then your sorrows. If you're unable to write in the chat box, please email the church at caring@uuabq.org. And may we remember those who have spoken, those they have named, and those we hold in silence in our hearts.
carry these joys and concerns together. We journey together with joys for nature and the sun and gatherings of family and gratitude for health. Joy Mary Schwartz's daughter, Amy, married Kyle. Amy and Kyle, we wish blessings on you. We remember Wally Ford with joy for all he brought to this community. And we lift up our concerns, concerns for those who resist the processes of democracy. And Graham Bowker is remembering his mom, and concerns for Olivia and Zach, who are struggling and ill, and Bronwyn, who lost a friend, and we hold Kodo in our hearts at the passing of her dog after so many years of companionship. All these cares and joys we lift up to the great powers of celebration, healing, and renewal that are known by many names. Will you join me in the spirit of prayer? We lift up Alan Porter and Kathy McKnight as they struggle with illness. May they know healing and peace. We remember Gwen Johns, Jenny John's niece, who passed this week from COVID. May the care of this congregation carry Jenny and her family through this terrible time, and may light perpetual shine upon Gwen. Remember Reverend Dr. Hope Johnson, who passed this week. Reverend Hope was a pillar of our UU movement, who led efforts to make Unitarian Universalism more equitable and more welcoming. May light perpetual shine upon her. We lift up all those who help us to live in these times, who keep us enjoying life despite the pandemic. May they know that through the work of their hands, they bring love into the world. And we lift up all those who are suffering now, suffering from illness or loneliness. May they know healing and comfort soon. May we see what's beautiful and holy in our community. May we see what's beautiful and holy in each other. May we see what's beautiful and holy in ourselves. And may we all be held in the heart of love. Peace be with you.
And also with you. Will you join me in singing another hymn? This one by the wonderful hymn writer Brian Wren and musician David Hurd. This is one of my all-time favorite hymns in the Gray Hymnal. We are not our own. Of care.
Reading this morning, Running for Redemption, is by Neva Flores Varga Smith. What could a rhyme redeem for the sunlight of your soul, coming through a misty, stirring rain? In the empty time and space you cannot control, running down the halls of your pain. Do you leave your broken phrases to float among spheres, insistently flowing into that which makes you glad, forming lessons you may not wish to hear, when the walls of your halls are painted sad? Just how high is the ceiling of your expectations? Does it exceed the flame of yonder sun? Will your eyes begin to glisten when you cannot control the halls of your life as you run? There is a window in your hall where sunlight softly streams into the promises which you are able to redeem. If you will stop running down the halls of all you cannot control, your soul will feel the warmth of its beams.
Love that. Well, before I talk about forgiveness, I immediately have to ask you to forgive me and let me talk about something very important in the life of this church. In fact, excuse the cheesy pun, but instead of forgiveness, I'm going to talk a little about giveness. Yep, I'm going to talk about the pledge campaign. Just a few weeks to go, we're at about 80% of our goal of $1,032,000, and about 80% of our households have pledged. And we're doing pretty well and holding steady when we compare it to last year's numbers. But this last 20% is when things start to get real. This last 20% is when your ministers and the church board of directors start getting really nervous. It's when we start worrying about having to make hard decisions. That's because we're moving into the process of creating our budget for 2021. And this is the budget that this congregation will approve at the annual meeting on January 31st. And we don't finalize the budget until the pledge campaign is complete, because we can't plan until we know what we're working with. That's why pledging is so important. We always appreciate gifts, of course, but it's the pledges that are predictable. The pledges tell us what to expect in the coming year, so we base the budget on our pledges. Now, we know that 2021 is going to be a funky year. We don't expect that we'll have rental income for at least the first half of the year and possibly the entire year. We don't know what's going to happen in our community or even to folks in this congregation. And frankly, this coming Congress will decide who the winners and losers will be in the recovery, and that's up for grabs. And we understand that folks in this congregation are feeling that uncertainty too. So we understand if people want to be more conservative in their pledges this year. We understand, for real, if this is a year when perhaps folks can't pledge at all. But if that's the case, we still want to hear from you so we can know and we can plan accordingly. Your pledge makes so much possible. Some of the work of the church is very visible, like these wonderful Zoom worship services with such great words and music. And some of the work of the church is harder to see, like the pastoral care that's always going on behind the scenes, or our conversion to a new church database system that will make it easier for folks in the congregation to connect with each other and connect with the amazing work that we do among ourselves and out in the community. About 3/4 of the budget goes to the staff, and really They are stupendous. They've all worked so hard these past 8 months to make a very challenging pivot to online work this year, whether it's in religious education or the new member experience or figuring out how to meet as a choir. In a big church, it can be hard to see all the amazing things that are happening. And even though we don't meet at the church campus anymore, the campus still needs to be taken care of. We want it to be in top shape when we finally get back together in person. There's another reason to pledge too, though. If you have the means to pledge, pledging is a way of making the church more welcoming. We want to be a church for all people, regardless of class. When folks pledge generously, they're making room for folks who may not be able to pledge. You know, you may remember Reverend Angela telling the story of how when she was a young mother, she'd scrimp and save so she could somehow come up with $35 a month to give to her UU church. And there were times when she couldn't always do that. In her congregation, generous donors made sure that there was a place at the table for her, regardless of her means. Generosity is a kind of radical hospitality. So if you haven't already, please pledge. You can pledge at the link in the chat bar. You can write your pledge in a note and send it to the church office. You can email your pledge. You can call the office and pledge. Whatever works for you, just please let us know your pledge so this church can plan responsibly and continue to be a resource for spiritual growth and a community of love and justice. Thanks again for the forgiveness. Now we'll actually talk about forgiveness. I know a minister who was serving in a congregation, and one day they got an email from a congregant. And this congregant was writing out of the blue, and they had a complaint. They complained that the minister and other staff members were putting their pronouns in their signatures. So just to explain the pronoun thing quickly, Angela and I think most of the staff here put their pronouns in their signatures of their emails. And the pronoun thing is becoming part of common etiquette, especially in professional settings, to introduce oneself with one's name and one's preferred gender pronouns. Hi, I'm Reverend Bob LaValle, he, him. That way it makes it clear to other folks how to refer to me. Now, I'm a cisgender man and I have a traditional male name and I look like a man, but not everyone looks like the gender that they actually are. Not all names convey a person's gender. So rather than put someone in the potentially harmful position of being misgendered, we share our pronouns. Some folks say he, him, or she, her, or they, them, and there are lots of variations. But when I put he, him in my email signature, I'm trying to normalize that practice. So it just becomes a thing that we do to make everyone more comfortable in the world. It's just common respect to support folks in using the pronouns that they want to use. So back to this congregant. They didn't write their first email with any curiosity or compassion. They just wanted the minister and the staff to stop doing it. That minister was furious because one of the other recipients of that email was a staff member who was the parent of a gender nonconforming child who had really struggled over the past couple of years, and it was so hurtful. Now, that child's parent actually wrote back a very kind and understanding email that explained, without mentioning their child, why pronouns were important. Well, the congregant wrote back a non-apology, and at that point, the minister stepped in and said that they wanted to meet with the congregant face-to-face to have a talk about it. The congregant's response was to fire back an angry email resigning from the congregation. There would be no conversation. There would be no attempt to return to covenant. There would be no chance at redemption and growth. When I heard that story, it made me really sad. And it made me think about how Unitarian Universalism doesn't really have a solid theology for forgiveness and redemption. we don't really have an established way to face up to the absolute reality that we're all going to screw up at some time. And we need a way to return to covenant, to return to wholeness and relationship. I think about that congregant who just couldn't imagine a way to accept accountability for their actions. He couldn't imagine a path to reconciliation that would affirm their worth and dignity, even though they had messed up. And perhaps that's because we don't really have a common understanding of what that process might be. I think there are other religions that have pretty good ways for handling this. You know, in Judaism, they have Yom Kippur, which is also known as the Day of Atonement. Now, Judaism is a big religion with many variations, but in general, the day is observed by a day-long fast and prayers. It's explicitly a time for the practitioner to review the past years and consider all the ways that they have failed to live into their values, to consider the ways they have damaged their relationships. I think many practitioners use the days around Yom Kippur to attempt to reach out to people that they may have wronged, to ask for forgiveness and to make amends. I have a Jewish friend who likes to call the Day of Atonement the Day of At-One-Ment, spelled the same way, since it's a time when grudges are buried and relationships can reconnect. Roman Catholics practice the sacrament of confession. So a Catholic person goes to the church and gets into a confessional, which is kind of like a tiny closet with two doors. I grew up Catholic, so I did this. There's a priest in the other door who slides open a screen between the priest and the person making confession. They can hear their voice, but not see their face. So there's a kind of privacy to the process. And they pray together a little bit, and then the congregant shares with the priest their sins. And the priest may ask a few questions, and then they offer a penance, which is usually a certain number of prayers that must be said, you know, 10 Hail Marys, something like that. And then the priest offers absolution and a blessing. And the sins are purged, and the congregant can return to their life, hopefully with a lighter heart. Now, these practices have their flaws, but they have their purposes too. You know, appropriate guilt is a healthy spiritual emotion. And while I'm talking about guilt, let me just spell out a really important distinction. That's the distinction between guilt and shame. Guilt is when I say, I did a bad thing. Shame is when I say, I am a bad person. Guilt can be helpful in nudging us to do better. Shame shuts that process down. Shame is a poor platform for growth. So when we consider our guilt, which can be a healthy process, let's be careful that it doesn't become shame. There are no bad people here. What I like about both these practices is that they acknowledge that we are all flawed humans. Try as we might, we're going to make mistakes, we're going to hurt other people's feelings, we're going to fail to live into our values. That just happens. But by normalizing the truth of this, it allows people to not freak out when they screw up. It doesn't take away the fact that they messed up, but it allows them to move forward and hopefully return to the community in wholeness. You know, one of my core theologies is the belief that people can change, that people can always evolve into something better. It's a challenging one for me. I've got to say, last 4 years, it's been really challenging for me to live into that. But without that, what's the point of all this if we can't believe that people evolve? The truth is, in any human organization, there's going to be conflict. And rather than avoid it or suppress it, how do we figure out how to have healthy conflict, which includes a return to wholeness and reconciliation? Now, one thing that's really cool about our church, First Church in Albuquerque, is that we have a healthy community committee. And the healthy community committee assists the church community when conflict arises. And there's more information on who they are and how they approach conflict on the First U website. And the link is in the chat. I've been thinking about restorative justice as I think about UU theologies of forgiveness and redemption. Now, restorative justice is a whole body of practices that are different from our criminal justice system. Instead of focusing on what rules were broken and then what kind of retribution is called for, restorative justice focuses on what harm was caused and what needs and obligations have been created on that harm, from that harm. So restorative justice lays out the different roles when harm has been caused. For those who have been harmed, they need justice to provide the four following things: information, truth-telling, empowerment, and restitution or vindication. For those who have caused harm, they need justice to provide the following four things: accountability, encouragement to experience personal transformation, encouragement and support for integration back into the community, and for some small number, at least some temporary restraint. And I love that restorative justice has roles not just for the person being harmed and the person causing harm, but also for the community. All harm doesn't happen in a vacuum, it happens in a community. So the community needs justice to provide three things: attention to their concerns as victims, opportunities to build a sense of community and mutual accountability, and perhaps most important, opportunities to foster the conditions that promote healthy communities where harm is less likely to happen. I think with all these roles in play, it's possible for the person causing harm to return to the community with their worth and dignity intact, our first principle, and also to be ready to grow as a person and be held accountable. Back to the story about the congregant with the problem with the pronouns. For any growth and return to relationship to be possible, folks need to stick around for the process. This might mean swallowing our pride. This might mean acknowledging a painful truth about us. It might mean having to take responsibility for doing harm. These are very hard things. And the question for us is, do we as Unitarian Universalists have the capacity to do this when it's on us, when we've done the harm? And do we as Unitarian Universalists have the capacity to respond to the person who's doing this in good faith with compassion and support? I see this playing out in our racial justice work. You know, one thing I've seen among progressives is a certain competitiveness. Sometimes I see us playing a little game called, who's the biggest racist in the room? Whoa, it's not me, it's that person over there who just said something kind of clunky. In our need to be perceived as woke, and I 100% include myself in this, we can turn on other people. Well, the anti-racism group showing up for racial justice has a principle to speak to this. They endorse calling people in, not calling them out. Calling people in, not out. That means when folks mess up, and we all do, we respond to them with curiosity and compassion rather than scorn. We bring them closer. And the difference this principle makes in a community is astounding. I mean, the question really is, do we want to be judged for the worst thing that we ever did? Or do we want to be judged for the next good thing that we will do? Which one of those places is more likely to inspire us to courage and integrity? I think looking forward to goodness is the path. So I have a lot more thinking to do about how redemption might become more of a core UU theology. And I'm really interested in learning from the folks in this room what they think might help us move there. So send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Until then, I pray that we can practice healthy conflict with courage and integrity. I pray that we can call each other in rather than out. And I pray that we all stay focused on the next great thing that we will do. Amen, and blessed be.
Our offertory words this morning is actually part of a larger prayer by the Reverend Sarah Eileen LaWall. And it's titled, Seeking That Which Unites Us. In this time when rhetoric blusters about and words are used as weapons, may we remember we are people of resilience. We have faced uncertainty before. We have weathered storms. We have been consumed by flames. We have risen like the phoenix from the ashes, and we will again. May we remember our shared humanity, our universal kinship, our interdependence, as we unclench our fists and breathe together. This church and all who enter it are beacons of hope. We weather the storms. We remember our shared humanity. What helps and unites us in this support is the support you give this church, its mission and programs. To make your offering, please click on the link posted in the chat or go to the church website. You may also send a check to the church. Our Change for the Future recipient this quarter is Sage Albuquerque. Sage Albuquerque provides support for older LGBTQ plus people in the Albuquerque metropolitan area through advocacy, social programs, education, support groups, and resource distribution. We counter isolation, fear, and loneliness by creating a caring community of LGBT elders who look forward and look out for each other. We will gratefully receive today's offering. Thank you.
Fill my mind.
what is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Church of Albuquerque, and thank you on behalf of Sage Albuquerque. We're coming close to the end of the service, and we'll have the opportunity for breakout groups, and I have a suggestion for a discussion question for your breakout groups. Perhaps folks want to share, have you ever experienced a moment of redemption? I'm putting that in the chat. Have you ever experienced a moment of redemption when the grace of a community or an individual helped you get back to wholeness? Let's extinguish our chalices. May we practice healthy conflict through courage and integrity. May we call each other in, not out. And may we stay focused on the next great thing that we will do. Our worship has ended. Our service begins. Go in peace, gentle people, and practice radical love.
I said, Julian, you are holy, you are holding my hand, and Julian, you are holy, you are holding my hand. She said, all will be well, all will be well, all manner of things will be well. I said, Julian, do you not know, do you not know about sorrow? She said, all will be well, all will be well, all manner of things will be well. I said, Julian, do you not know, do you not know about loneliness? And Julian, do you not know, do you not know about disease? And I said, Julian, not know about cruelty. I said, Julian, it's too much. It brought me to my knees. But she said, all will be well. All will be well. All manner of things will be well. And she said, no one does not know, does not know about brought me to my knees, where I heard all will be well, all will be well, all manner of things will be well. I said, Julian, you are holy, you are holding my hand. My hand. All will be well, all will be you not know about friends? And she said, baby girl, do you not know? Do you not know about the spirit? She said,